This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by the Ready or Not Go-To Guides. Inspired by over 75 conversations with working mums and created with experts in their fields, we've released the Breastfeeding and Returning to Work, Postpartum and Return to Work Planning, and Childcare 101 Go-To Guides. They're $29 individually or $69 as a set. These go-to guides are full to the brim with the sort of information that we wish we had, delivered in a way that is readable and beautiful and downloadable now at readyornot.au. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work work. I'm Lou, and after a 1 week break, it's good to see your face, my friend.
Likewise, I am Loz. I have a good news story today that isn't something that you would find in the papers or really on the news, but
that's because you're out in the streets, aren't you?
Excellent.
You are doing
the I'm
Lord's
out on the
work.
Streets talking with the people. I am. So I attended a talk, which, okay, it did turn into a wine tasting this week.
Oh, it was a wine tasting.
That's not the point of it. That's not the whole point of it. There was a talk before it.
There was talking at the wine tasting.
Yeah, there was. So the gentleman talking said something I found so profound and funny that I had to share it. So his name is Tom Guthrie, and he is a sheep farmer turned winemaker and owner of Grampians Estate, which I can attest to has delicious wine. Did I buy some? Yes, it was very nice. He began his diversification into wine in 1989. At the age of 60, he enrolled in a wine science degree at Charles Sturt University. Such were the demands of running a large grazing and cropping property and establishing vineyards at the same time that it took him several years to complete. So he said at this talk, I used to joke that I was the only student with a senior's card and a student card. Now, what I found so fascinating about this, and we touched on this a few weeks back, Lou, but I honestly sat there when he said that and I thought, if this man, and I know it's, you know, the stereotypical men versus women, whatever, but if a man at the age of 65 can complete a degree and become a winemaker, our listeners, most likely under this age, can change the course of their career also.
Oh, that's an inspiring
way
to start the day. How old is this man now? He must be really quite old.
I think he's now 75. So when he was giving the talk, he was around 75, I want to say. Sorry if that's not his age. Maybe he's slightly younger. But I found it so inspiring that he thought to himself, I'm going to complete a degree and I don't care if I'm the oldest person in there because I'm still going to work for 15 years and I want to enjoy it. I'm like, far out, Tom. It's a
good
great
you,
way
mate.
Of looking at life.
When you read this out to me, I read that he was 60 in 1989. So I was like, gee, he's old, but I get it now. I'm with you. That was when he started the process and of 60, he enrolled. What a legend. That
yes.
is some inspiring
what
stuff.
What a legend.
So
exactly.
Today I am in a co-working space in Noosa. I'm away with my parents and I am so aware that there's people out there that might be thinking I'm being really loud, so I'm a bit nervous. But today, what are we talking about? Study reveals that husbands stress women twice as much as children do. We put up a poll on this, so we'll hear from our listeners here too. And some JD Vance comments from 2021 have resurfaced. And both my friend Jennifer Aniston and I have something to say about it. Normally, I say take it away, my friend, but this time you left me the front slot, Lozzie, so I will take it away, my friend. In 2021, current Ohio Senator and Trump's election running mate, JD Vance, told Fox News host Tucker Carlson, one of my most hated people on this planet, that the US was being run by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and their choices that they've made, and so they want to make the rest of the country miserable too. As you can imagine, he's received some backlash, and he's obviously become top of mind now that he's running in this presidential campaign with none other than Donald Trump. So there were three people he cited in particular when making these remarks. The first one was Kamala Harris, who's a stepmom. Pete Buttigieg was another. He and his husband, who now have twins, were at the time going through an arduous adoption process. The other person mentioned was Congresswoman AOC. And it's worth noting here that Vance only mentioned women and a gay man, which seems as no surprise or comes as no surprise to me. So for so many reasons, these already ridiculous comments are now even more moot to me. But you can imagine they were quite powerful to the anti-abortion Republicans he was hoping to choose to elect him as senator in 2022. And elect him they did. So with the election race now in full swing, of course, stories like these are starting to resurface. And unfortunately for JD Vance, his 2021 comments caught the attention of one Jennifer Aniston. I want to call her America's sweetheart. Do you agree with that?
No. I know this is topical. I want to love Jennifer Aniston. I do. And I really love her comment. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm pro. But I've never found her overly warm, overly relatable. Like, I loved Friends. I just.
Is this internalized misogyny because she doesn't have kids?
No, not at all. I actually, for a minute, I almost forgot that she didn't have any. I think it's more, I don't even know what it is. I've never found her a Hollywood celebrity that I'd like gel with or like really become bestie with.
Oh my God. I think she's the funniest person ever. Oh, wow. This is taking me by surprise. This is taking me by absolute surprise.
It's not the kid thing.
I can't help but wonder if it's internalized and you don't even realize though. You know, like we all have internalized misogyny. Is this yours?
Nah, because I reckon this was years ago. As in, this is like the Friends era.
Okay. When it was, you know, not as expected.
Yeah, I probably like her more now, I would say. As in, I find her more relatable now.
Because she's been open about her struggles. Okay. I'm going to give you that. Okay. So Jen took to her Instagram stories to say, I truly can't believe this is coming from a potential VP of the United States. All I can say, Mr. Vance, I pray that your daughter is fortunate enough to bear children of her own one day. I hope she will not need to turn to IVF as a second option because you are trying to take that away from her too. So apparently there was a bill that they recently didn't pass or that he voted against to do with IVF. I don't think it was a blanket rule of taking it off the table, but it was making it a little bit harder or something. So I don't think he's necessarily anti-IVF.
It's already hard. So it would probably be a lot harder.
Exactly. Yeah. He was voting against something to do with that. So that's why she added that second comment. It's worth noting that this is coming from a man, while we're here, that once described Trump as reprehensible and cultural heroin once upon a time. Then in a complete backflip.
This, Lou, this isn't even once upon a time. So all of these like comments are coming back on TikTok. This was like a matter of years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Like it wasn't 20 years ago. This was recent.
No.
Interestingly,
this is recent.
The backflip of his comments about Trump came straight after he was elected as the Senate in Ohio in 2022. So he reportedly made it known that he would then support Trump for presidency in 2024 because maybe he thought, I'm box seat for VP here. Let's go. So we're talking about a man here whose words don't hold much weight or integrity. And sometimes I wonder, why do we talk about them? But we talk about them because unfortunately, some people decide to listen to them. So in response to Jen, Vance defended his comments on the Megyn Kelly show. I think she's a pretty heavy right-wing Republican type, saying obviously it was a sarcastic comment. People are focusing so much on the sarcasm and not on the substance of what I actually said. I don't think you should really be sarcastic when you're a leader of a state or a nation. But anyway, he added that he was criticizing Democrats for being anti-family and anti-child. He also said it was disgusting that Jen would bring his daughter into it as she was only two. And I actually can't work this one out. Jen isn't talking about his daughter having sex or anything. There's nothing sexualized about what she's talking about. She's simply talking about motherhood one day for her. So I want to know quickly from you, why do you think he's calling that disgusting? Is it just because he's clutching at straws? Or what can you possibly ascertain about what Jen said about his daughter that was disgusting?
I think he would view that as an attack on the integrity of his family demeanor. And the easiest way to destabilize that is to place the onus on something that's worse than like nitpicking at your family values. It's nitpicking at your child because that is the lowest of low.
Yeah. So he's trying to make her look really bad. Yeah. Even though she really wasn't doing that. I see what you're saying. He's trying to place her as a villain.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not about that. She's talking about the future essentially of women.
Yeah.
Not. Yeah. And she's using his child as a case study.
100%. She's not attacking the child.
Absolutely not. But the way that he's framed it is to suggest that she is anti-children, anti-family, and she's attacking a young, innocent female, which pulls on the heartstrings.
You hit the nail
right?
on the head. I'm glad that you are. I asked you that question because I hadn't even thought of that. So in other clips, Vance has proposed that childless Americans pay higher rates of tax and that those with families should be able to vote on behalf of their children. So say that you had very different political views from your parents, they would still be able to vote on your behalf. Not only does it mean that, it also means that families have better buying power basically in how a nation is run because they're able to speak on behalf of more people. So don't get me even started on how problematic both of these ideas are. We'll get to them more soon. Yeah. Now, I am getting somewhere with this. I'm nearly done. I reckon that J.D. Vance, while an obvious Republican bigot who cares not for women who don't fit his neat little category of what a woman should be, would potentially be shaking in his boots just a fraction more than he might have been when he first made these comments, because I think women and people on the outer have a little bit more social currency in 2024 than they did in 2021. I know it's only been 3 years since these comments, and I don't think he'd regret the meaning behind them or that his values would have changed. But I do wonder, as we watch women become more and more influential, if he's a bit worried about what weight these comments will hold in today's context. 2023 was the year of Barbie, and more locally in Australia, we saw the way the Matildas united a nation. 2024 has seen Beyonce and Taylor Swift come into even more power than they already held. And then you have celebrities like Jen, arguably one of the more popular celebrities in America, opening up more and more about her fertility struggles. You can imagine then that she's developed a warm following among those who have had similar challenges. So her open criticism of Vance surely has to count for something in an era where women are talking about their bodies more in a political context. I don't know if I am overly optimistic here, and potentially I'm just totally wrong. There's one other article or one other thought piece that I want to bring up here. So I wrote all of this down as notes yesterday to talk to you about this. And then I saw our favorite, or one of our favorites, a journalist, Jessica Gross. We've read her articles before. She's from the New York Times. I want to share a bit with you what she wrote, because not only did she get inside my brain, but I feel like she like tapped all these little parts of my brain too. And it's an incredible piece.
Also, as you were talking before, it made me actually realize why I've never felt a deep connection with Jennifer Aniston. And I can hit the nail on the head on that one, and I'll tell you why. Yeah. It's because connection to me is sharing. Yeah. And I think that's why more recently, when she did open up about her struggles and maybe the less glamorous side of life, I felt a connection with her. But before then, because she was so private and closed off, I didn't feel like there was any relatability. It's like there's people that are always like, oh, my life's so great, my life's so good. You know, I'm just so fine. I'm like, I can't connect with that because mine isn't.
And really, she was just hiding a struggle from Hollywood. That is very interesting thing to think about. So those people that are private.
Yeah. The minute I was like, now I can relate to you. Now I feel like you're one of us. I feel like we're all in the same shit heap together.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about, because if you wanted privacy in Hollywood, I totally get that. But then how do you relate to the everyday people? What a conundrum.
I don't know.
One that we'll never have to face, luckily.
Exactly.
So this last article by Jessica Gross is titled "Attacking Kamala Harris for Not Having Kids Will Backfire." It got me thinking. So I had already been thinking, is J.D. Vance getting himself a bit found out by the way he's talking? Because everything that he's talking about is so individualistic. He's saying that people that don't have kids can't speak for families. And it's quite powerful, because in that we see a man that only wants to represent people similar to him. And I don't know if he realized that he was getting found out that way. And that's not what a leader should obviously do. They should speak for all different types of people. That's why we need people of color from different cultural backgrounds in power, people of the LGBTQI community, because we need different people representing different interests, not just white men representing families. So I'm just going to read a few bits and then we'll discuss. The first bit I want to read is, she says, first, let's note the obvious. If elected, Harris wouldn't be the first American president with no biological children. There were five others: George Washington, James Madison, Andrew Jackson, James Polk, and James Buchanan. Warren Harding had a child out of wedlock and publicly denied paternity. That he was the father was confirmed by DNA testing almost a century later. Very interesting that someone like J.D. Vance picks at someone like Kamala Harris, when you've had so many male examples of exactly that. I'm sure he thought that George Washington was a great leader. Second bit, it's not simply that by all accounts, Harris has a close, loving relationship with her stepkids. It's that it's possible for people who have basic empathy to understand the needs, aspirations, and concerns of fellow citizens who aren't exactly like them and to commit to their well-being. So he sort of finds himself out there because he's basically saying that he doesn't really care about other people's well-being if they don't fit the mold of a family that he wants to represent. It actually should be a requirement for presidential candidates to have compassion for people they'll never meet. And it strikes me as anti-American to argue that a politician is any less invested in families or our country's future because his or her parental status. It should go without saying, but having children doesn't necessarily make you a better person. That's my next point.
We've spoken about this.
I strongly agree with,
and
it made me think.
Absolutely spoken about this.
In a lot of ways, we think we've become worse people. And the other really interesting thing is that he tries to paint her as someone that is a bit anti-family, obviously, because she hasn't had her own children. She hasn't given birth and conceived. So then Jessica Gross points out, Harris could be one of the most pro-family candidates we've had in recent memory. She was the public face of Democrats' efforts in 2022 to promote the expanded child tax credits that families received as a part of the American Rescue Plan. And in his endorsement of Harris, Senator Michael Bennet of Colorado praised her commitment to the policy and her dedication to our country's security and our children's prosperity. By contrast, when CNN's Jake Tapper asked a question about childcare in the presidential debate last month, Donald Trump responded with a word salad about firing a bunch of people, draining the swamp, and how President Biden is terrible. So he pretty much avoided any talk about what families might get in terms of childcare. Another fascinating piece of the puzzle, just because they're pro people having babies does not make them pro family. Last year, Lozzie, when Vice President Harris spoke at a childcare center in 2021, she looked out at the crowd and referred to the kids in attendance as our babies. They're our babies, she said, because I was raised to understand that the children of the community are the children of the community. So my question to you is two-pronged, Lozzie. Do you think women have become significantly more powerful in 3 short years, or am I overstating this? That's my first question.
I would like to think yes. I believe social media has helped. I think we've come a long way as like a collective. But I will also say there are so many things happening with abortion laws in the States, and it's very difficult to comment on because do I think Australia has become more progressive? Absolutely. Is my knowledge of the States as good as the environment that I'm living in? No. I would almost say in a lot of regards, they've gone backwards.
Yeah.
So women's voices might be being heard more from like a publicity point of view, but are they actually being considered and actioned upon, like their thoughts, their research, their data, their insights, their knowledge? I don't think so.
In a policymaking way.
In America, very strongly held by men. And I would go one step further by saying in this new setup, I mean, I also read a couple of articles around this and on J.D. Vance's wife, who is a very well-known and accomplished lawyer who has taken a step down, or not maybe down, maybe we call it a career pause, in order to essentially support her husband in his endeavours. And there's a lot of talk about, oh, but he's married to a woman of ethnicity and he understands cultural diversity. And as sad as I think this is, I think he plays upon that to suit his political agenda and needs and to tug on the heartstrings. But neither of us know what he's like at home. Neither of us know what he's advocating for. And it's such a difficult conundrum to be in because you look at it from the outside and you do think, you know what? Maybe he does have a really good understanding of family life because he has a family. Maybe he has an understanding of different cultures, different ethnicities, different racial needs because he's in a family that is mixed cultures, mixed race as well. But also, As we very well know with politicians, their primary objective is voters, and they're going to pull on things that they think are going to align with voters, whether or not really they believe in those themselves. He's aligned himself to a party that he openly said was awful, that he said Trump was the worst mistake essentially in American history. And now he's going about his daily business saying how great everything is. The general public is looking at him like, what's going on here? You're a nutter.
Politics, and particularly American politics, just seem like such a ridiculous laughing stock. Like, it's like, are we having each other on? This guy hated the guy a few years ago, and now he's in the same party as him. Like,
but this is
it makes
thing,
you
Lou.
Almost want to shake the cage. Like, this is
no,
crazy.
No. But let's think of it from a strategic point of view, though. We know that the people that are most likely to vote now, that the people that most care are Gen Z, right? Gen Z. How do we engage with those people? From an American point of view, I guarantee, do you know what people will be saying? If he can do a 360 or a 180 or whatever the right terminology is and come back around and say, you know what, many years ago, yeah, I did think Trump was an idiot. But now, you know, I've done some soul searching. I've really looked at his policies. And you know what, Gen Z, I was in your position. And now this is where I am now because of ABCD. That is so influential because so many people like us feel like that. We're like, this guy's an idiot. What are we doing? But then you get somebody else that's like, I was you. I agree. He was an idiot, but now he's not. Like, I guarantee you they'll do that. They'll do that. They'll play on that to his advantage, which is even more whack, but it makes sense.
Oh, that is terrifying. I didn't even think of that, Lozzie. So I did ask the pollers if they thought that women's power hit different or not in 2024 compared to 2021. What do you think won out? Do you think that the people of Ready or Not think that women's power hits different or that not enough progress has been made?
I would say not enough progress has been made.
Yeah, yep. I'm an optimistic idiot. 60% of people say they don't think enough has changed, and 40% of people think that women's power hits different in 2024. So it will be really interesting to see. I do agree, though, with what Jessica Gross was saying in that he might receive new backlash with these comments because he's coming after childless women, and hopefully those women become louder and that makes a difference. My second question to you, and I've asked you this so many times, I'm almost sick of asking you this question, but in the context of this exact story, why is a man so scared of an independent woman that doesn't follow what he believes to be the correct order of things? Do you think it is that motherhood traps us in a way? I'm not saying that motherhood, I don't want to make that sound really negative. In a way, it puts us in a different box than if a woman is just 100%. Running free doing whatever she wants.
Yeah, I think there's two ways of looking at it. I think I don't agree with this, but I do think there is some opinions that independent women that don't have children may be really high up in their careers and very ambitious and very driven. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you can be a mom and still have the same ambition.
Yeah.
But I think it's a direct threat.
That's really interesting. It's like there's going to be more seats at the table of women. Yeah. That's Gee, you're smart. And our brains work so different. And I love what you bring to me.
They work so differently. But I also think when you're a politician, you need a level of arrogance, confidence, belief in yourself. And you really do have to have quite a black and white perspective. And when it's challenged, it can be very difficult. Because if he wasn't someone that did have huge self-belief, he wouldn't be in that role. So she's directly attacking his values, find that very difficult, as would any other politician in that position.
Can you run for prime minister or president soon?
Oh, I'd be bloody awful. Like, I
thought you were going to say awesome, and I was going to be like, yes, you would.
No, I'd be awful because I think the difference with me is that I am black and white. I find it very difficult to understand the grey. I listen to it and I appreciate the feedback and I love getting feedback, but sometimes I have to like really sit in it and be like, okay, why?
That's not how I describe you. I feel like you have the most open mind ever.
I do. There's a difference between having an open mind and being set on something that you want. Yes. I find it very difficult to like move off the path that I have chosen.
Like if someone was obscenely racist or like homophobic, you wouldn't be able to try and reason with them. Is that what you mean?
I could listen and take on their viewpoints, but I'd find it very difficult.
You couldn't lead those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with
you. I find it hard. And you do kind of need to have that.
I'd vote you in. Like, I'd vote you
in. Have. Yeah. Thanks, Lou. I appreciate that. I would interchange my presidency with you.
Oh, I'll be the VP. Lozzie, our go-to guides have been out in the wild for a few months now, and we've had some bloody brilliant reviews. I'm so proud of them. Which one are you using the most at the moment and why?
For me at the moment, I'm still using the postpartum guide, believe it or not. So there's a great section about considerations and conversations to have with your partner. And I often use these as prompters to check in and evaluate what's working and what's not, and to make sure that we're talking about essentially making work work for both of us. There's also an excellent chapter in that guide about communicating your boundaries, which has been really helpful. I mean, I'd also say I have been using the childcare guide quite a lot as we look at kindergartens for next year, and it's helped me to prepare what questions to ask and essentially to work out my rebate. What about you, Lou?
God, this is going to look so bloody scripted because you and I have been really fangirling the postpartum and return to work planning guide. But since I've started to return to work to the actual office, I'm obsessed with the breastfeeding and returning to work guide, mostly for how I store my milk, what to pack when I am packing to pump at the office, and all of the things to make a day of pumping at work that bit easier, particularly how to schedule in pumping, what to talk to your manager about, what to talk to your other team members about, and just all of those little things that make the day run smoother. There's so much to pack and think about when you are pumping at work. And I cannot believe how brilliant this guide is. You can shop all three go-to guides now for $29 each or $69 for the trio at readyornot.au.
Another article very close to my heart over the last couple of weeks was this one. Study reveals that husbands stress women twice as much as children do. Before I even get to this, do you feel this? Do you resonate? Because I know Hayden's great.
No, I'm sorry.
It's amazing. Are you serious?
I knew you'd be annoyed.
You're joking.
I do not resonate with this. No, I do not at all.
Oh my God. I, on so many levels, I would like to share some of my own stories to tell you why. So, after years of jokes, memes, and hilarious husband callouts, science has finally confirmed what women have been saying all along. Mums stress out over their husbands twice as much as they stress over their kids. In a survey conducted by Today, 7,000 mums from across the US were asked about the reasons for their stress. In what comes as a surprise to absolutely no mums ever, Today found that the vast majority, except for Lucy, of mums rate their overall stress levels at a whopping 8.5 out of 10. On top of that.
No, I still rate my stress levels high. It's just not coming from Hayes.
Right.
I'm not relaxed over here.
On top of that, 46% of mums surveyed felt like their husbands caused them way more stress than their kids. Today, they explain some of the reasons mums find their husbands to be so damn stressful. The overwhelming majority, in fact, I would also be in this, 75%, said that they always feel the need to do all of the household and parenting chores because they don't think that the work will get done otherwise. Now, this does come to this whole concept of weaponized incompetence because I also fall into that category. One in five say not having enough help from their partner is a huge source of daily stress. And I, again, think this comes to managing expectations, which we talk really well about in our postpartum guide. The article continues, maybe there's a simmering anger or resentment about pulling our weight in household tasks or decisions around money, home life, socializing, and much more. There are so many potential triggers for disagreement, and we are often tired or overwhelmed by the physical and mental load of everything that needs to get done. And this sometimes means that instead of finding our co-parents supportive, we actually feel as if they are simply adding an extra weight to our lives. Now, I want to go in to say, do I always feel like this? No. However, Ryan regularly travels for work. Regularly. I would almost say
I don't know how you do it.
A week.
Fucking hell, is it that often?
Yeah. So I will go into this. I'd say this is the comment that I would love to answer. I don't know how you do it. I do. I run a tight ship. There is structure. There is cleanliness. There is a time that we do things all together. Ryan and I are opposite personalities, working styles, people, which is why we work so well together. However, when it comes to managing a household, when he's not here, things go my way. They run on time. They run somewhat smoothly. There is not additional stuff. Like, I don't have to do his washing, his cleaning. And I know you will say he should be doing it anyway, which he should be, but he doesn't. And sometimes I feel like that was less stressful. Like, love you, doll. And I love you being here 95% of the time. But the one day that you're away, it's not that it feels like a break, but it does feel like a reduction in overall workload. Like, it does. Oh, I had to cook one less meal. Like, things like that. And I know you're like, you should be splitting the parenting 50-50, but it doesn't work like that in my house.
No, but it should, because he would go to work. If he was a single man, he would still do the same amount of work. You and his kids are not the reason that Ryan has done what he's done for his career. So then why?
No.
Why? He's not going to work for his family. He's just making an income that does fall into the family dynamic.
True. Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'll tell you why. Because the way that our relationship has been set up from the past is the way that it's continued on. And I know it's not right, but I met Ryan at a very young age and I was very wanting to impress and wanting to do these. And I'm also a control freak and I like things done my way, which works when I'm by myself. And it doesn't necessarily work when the two of us together. So, for example, Ryan might be like, let her stay up late. Come on. Like, she's not going to be three forever. Like, let's all watch a movie together. I'm like, mate, it's a Tuesday night. I got shit to do. I want her in bed. And it's not a bad thing. When he's here, he wants to do those things and she loves it. Like, Sienna loves it. But I'm like, hey, you're making my life harder. Like, just
yes.
Do what I say.
Someone actually said, a few people said really similar comments, which we'll get to at the end of this. I have a question for you. So if you left his washing, which I know we've spoken about this in the past, if you let his washing just pile up, would he get annoyed at you for not doing it? Or is it just that it piles up because he is a very slow
mover? It bothers me.
It bothers you. So he's not bothered by you not doing his washing. You're just bothered because he doesn't do it quick enough. So you
here's an example.
Need to work on your maternal gatekeeping. It's both of you. No, it's not just you. It is not just you.
Well,
but it is partly you. I will give you that.
So here's a classic example. Many months ago, I was like, I'm not putting your washing away. Fuck that. Because I fold it neatly and you squash it. And that, it actually grates my soul because I spend time and effort making it beautiful.
Oh, why?
So I said, you know what? Here's a basket, because I like it. So I was like, here's a basket. It's going in there. That basket has been sitting there with clean clothes for months. He's like, I can't find my jumper. I'm like, look in the basket. Is it there? Where is it? Hello, jumper. Where? I don't know, mate. Check in that dying hole of washing over there that is probably
moldy
starting to smell like
basket mold.
Yeah, correct.
I think me not being that clean, like I'm semi-organized and semi-clean, but I think me not being a clean freak or a control freak has really done me good in terms of sharing the load.
Nah. So like, for example, Ryan is away for the next two nights and he was away last night. Do I feel a bit lonely and sad? Yeah, sure. I would like to, you know, share the load. And he's amazing at some things. Like he does bedtime with the kids every night.
Yeah.
Every night he does a book reading. I sit in the couch, scroll through my phone, fucking live my life for 15 minutes and enjoy myself. He is very good at that. So I'm like, damn it, it would be nice for him to be involved in that every night while he's not here. But when the kids come home, it'll be his dinner, then we're getting in our jammies, or then we're having a bath, then we're getting in our jammies, then we're going to bed. Like it's just tightly run to a degree that I love.
Yeah.
Ryan doesn't like the same degree. He wants to have fun, like let's kick the ball. No, please no.
Darling, drop the structure. Drop the structure.
It is. It seriously is. So when this study came out about like husband stressing their wives, I'm like, for sure, mate, 100%. Yeah. Like also some of the questions he asks me sometimes, I'm like, where have you been? Hello.
But that's what happens if you control things because then you do it and then they never do it. Maybe I am fully blaming you. No, I'm not. I'm not. Weaponized incompetence is a historical topic that is so deeply ingrained.
So tell me why you're not in this camp though, because it's more 50-50 parenting, right?
We share as much as we can. I would say what stresses me out more is the historical expectations of a mum and the gender pay gap. And the societal expectation. So the fact that like Hayden is probably going to earn more money than me for a long time, potentially forever, that pisses me off because at the end of the day, as we've spoken about, we need to pay bills. And the person that earns more money is going to pay more of those bills in a shorter amount of time, aka Hayden working 5 days a week, me working three, as opposed to say Hayden working four and me working four or whatever.
Like, yeah.
The spread of that equals If Hayden works 5 days, we get more money. So I would say my annoyance comes from more those types of things. And then also the expectations I have of myself as the mum that I find it really hard to still let go of because of the way we've all been brought up with, you know, a mother's role. And then thirdly, my frustration or stress comes from the fact that even though it's such an incredible privilege to grow, birth and breastfeed a baby, that is also such a big weight to carry. So I'd say they're more my frustrations. I'm not saying Hayden's perfect, but I would say that in the dynamic of the way like a mum-dad couple runs in this sort of economy and with the expectations placed on us, I'd say he does pretty much as good a job as he can. So it's those outside factors that really get me going.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I'm more of the in-the-moment little tasks that give me the shits. When Ryan comes home and takes his socks off and leaves them at the front door, I'm like, I can't cope with that. I've said to him, and he's laughed about it, I'm like, mark my word, the reason I leave you won't be about a big thing. It won't be about a big fight, a big bang event. It will be about that fucking sock at the front door, and I will literally deadpan him in the eye and say, I'm out. You're on your own, sweetie. That sock is the end of us.
This isn't to say Hayden doesn't leave shit around sometimes. He's pretty good. And it's not to say that it never bothers me. I'm not some like relaxed goddess that's just like, whatever. He'll pick it up when he wants to and we're all love and happiness over here. So I do get annoyed by this sometimes and I pick it up in that absolute ball of fury and I shove it into the one cupboard. But what he does with it beyond that point, I don't give a fuck about. And if he asks me where anything is, I ignore him.
I know. I do also think it depends how old your children are. And I'd love to know how old kids are or were in this study, because I would say at the moment, my frustrations are less. Like my kids stress me out less because they're small. They can't really do much. Like the worst I can do is like get a pen and draw on the wall, which has happened. Or like, you know, do something weird, like put a toy. Like the other day I lost my gate buzzer. I was like in house arrest because Zabe had hit it in a pot in the mini kitchen. I was like, where the fuck is it, buzzer?
Oh, that's so
like, I'm actually stuck in my house.
Yeah.
It was so frustrating. But those are such minor frustrations in comparison to like the bigger topics of life. Like,
yeah, that's interesting. Like a really stressful teenager going through something like really hard,
exactly,
for example. Yeah, that's a really good point. Or like on the flip side, having a 2-month-old or something that could be quite stressful.
Yeah. Anyway, I found this very interesting. What did the pollers say? Tell me. Go on. I must hear.
All right. Guess what percentage of people agreed with you that they found their husband more stressful than their kids?
Oh, a lot. Now after speaking to you, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I should have married my own cousin. Disgusting, but seriously. I'm thinking like maybe 20% agreed with me. I mean, I would have thought it was like 80, but so sadly not. 50.
Yes, it's 54%. 50. So you do win. If this is a game,
even
you win.
Split it.
And no is 46%.
Okay, so it's even.
It's even. And then ask them what is the main source of the stress that they cause if they did say yes. Really very bang on with what you're saying. It's either changing the routine or providing a different energy that sort of stuffs up the routine. One person said, I feel bad saying this, but it's more chaotic when he's there, which is exactly what you just said.
That's
someone else said that he doesn't understand the overwhelm, the frustration, the constants of always being on.
Also me.
Someone else said not sharing the mental load and then asking so many questions gave.
That drives me
that
bonkers.
All the time. Someone said general learned helplessness, so aka weaponized incompetence, not intentional but frustrating. Another person said, I don't have a box big enough here, but lack of aligned values is huge. Money and the division of labor came up quite a few times, and then the profound lack of initiative. Different parenting styles was also a popular answer, so not surprising answers there, and I think everyone will relate to at least one of those. I know what your next question is, so you can ask first and then I'll tell you what the poll has said.
Oh no, what is my next question?
I thought you were going to ask me, how do you think we should combat this?
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. I wasn't thinking
it's on the production. It's on
I
the
love
production
that you
schedule.
Read.
I do pay attention, I promise.
Please. Yeah, tell me. Tell me.
Okay, I have two big answers first. The first is that we need dads and secondary caregivers to take some form of paid parental leave. I don't care when it is. I don't care how long it is for. It's just that they need to do it. It doesn't have to be taking away from those newborn days from a mum that's breastfeeding or anything like that. I just need them to take some of the leave. And the second is that we need to stop teaching little girls that they're bit players and that men are the main characters. Do you remember when you read out that incredible article about that in a past episode?
Can't remember.
Oh, well, it was really profound and it stuck with
me. This is how bad my memory is. Like a goldfish.
Again,
I
pay attention.
Because I got so much stress.
Oh, yeah, exactly, Lozzie. Whereas I'm just relaxed over here. No, I'm kidding. So there's a comment that I screen grabbed nearly 2 years ago. It's from the 22nd of November, 2022 in my phone that still lives in my mind rent-free. And I think it really speaks to the fact that we've all been really conditioned to think of men as the main characters and we're the bit players. And I want to read it to you because I think this is a big part of the problem. It came from a comment from someone whose profile name is La Grosse Toile. I imagine they're a bit French.
I remember what I said now. See, it's all coming back.
It's all coming back to me. So this person wrote a comment on a post that I don't have because I just screen grabbed the comment, but it was a Clementine Ford post. And this person wrote on it, "I've been thinking a lot about something you've been talking about lately, how most men are not truly really interested in women as humans equal to themselves with full, fascinating, self-determined lives. I've been thinking about all the men I've known in my almost half century. Yep. And you are right. Most of them don't see us at all except in relation to them. So how we can help them, what we do for them, how we play a part in their lives. Whereas we have been trained to not only see them, but to prioritize them and preempt their desires. We don't need them at all. If they want to come on board as equal humans, fine. But the vast majority are so exhausting." And I think that is true. Men are raised to act as the main characters a lot of the time, not always. And we are told that we are here to serve them. And that needs to fucking change.
Yeah, that perspective definitely needs to change. I think it is in a lot of regards. And I also think as a generation now raising girls, I mean, often I will say comments that don't necessarily need to be made, but I'll say them to signal to Sienna like the ways that things should be done. Example, Ryan will leave a cup next to the dishwasher and I'll be like, "Hey, I'm not a cleaner over here. Put your cup in the dishwasher." But I'll make it known to say it because even if I left it there for him to do, sometimes I think it's those conversations that need to be heard to empower little ones to be like, you know, "I'm not doing that." And that's the way that I was raised. But also in the background, I'm just over here just doing a lot. But at least I'm saying that it's wrong, but I'm still doing
Do as I say, not as I do, Sienna. So yeah, exactly. I want you to drop something because if it's not for you, it's for Sienna.
That's true.
I'll quickly tell you what the poll has said before we wrap up because we are running over. So I asked them all, how do we think we should combat this? Here's what people said. Couples counseling, that's a great one. If you feel like you're not sharing the load and that your partner doesn't understand you, because often if they haven't taken any parental leave, how can they fully understand you? Hopefully they can to some extent, but sometimes we need therapy. Someone said free therapy on that. And I think that would solve a lot of woes and actually be good for the economy if all couples or parents were gifted or not gifted, but given some free therapy. Someone said open conversations really help and things like those fair play cards. Mm-hmm. Two other answers here, actually three, emotional support being one of them, communication probably. This person then wrote, "Ha, ha, ha," which really made me laugh because as we know, you don't get much time to talk to your partner when you have kids and sometimes you don't want to. And lastly, more time with their kids. So again, some form of paid parental leave for the secondary caregiver is essential if we want to combat these issues. And that is all she wrote today, Lozzie. Sign us off, you sweet thing. It's great to see you again.
I love it when you call me sweet thing. So as always, if you did love listening to today's episode, please leave us a review. Every review counts. It helps. DM us about the stuff that you want us to talk about and follow us on readyornot.pod. See you next week.